You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. We always appreciate it. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. We'd love to hear from you throughout the show. A lot of texts and everything so far. Keep it up. You're always welcome here. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842 is our number. Jamie, it seems like ages ago, but it was only a year ago when Elon had the chainsaw and he was going after everything with Doge. And he went in and he gutted so many different programs. And we learned later that Elon and his people, Big Balls, etc., which is what was actually one of the guy's names, and I know it's juvenile to say it, but hey, welcome to the club. And if you're new here, yeah, I'm sometimes juvenile. Anyway,
it was a juvenile process and an organization in whole, so it checks this morning.
It does, and we were all concerned that they were getting access to our personal information, social security numbers, tax records, mm-hmm. everything that the government has that really should concern us anyway, but they have it. Well, guess what? We, once again, America, we were not hysterical. We were not overreacting. We were right. The Social Security Inspector General's office is investigating allegations that a former Doge engineer took sensitive data on a thumb drive in a major potential security breach. The internal watchdog at Social Security is investigating a complaint that alleges a former U.S. Doge service employee claimed that he had access to two highly sensitive agency databases and planned to share that information with his private employer. Now, a claim that if true, and again, this is just investigation ongoing, but if it is true, it would constitute an unprecedented breach of security protocols at an agency that serves more than 70 million Americans. And yes, no matter who you voted for, you pay your taxes, mm-hmm. and they may have stolen all your information.
Do you remember way back to yesterday when you and I on this very program talked about the administration wanting to rehire federal workers who were fired under Doge and then create something called the Tech Force?
I vaguely remember that.
It's a short-term technical positions, in case you missed it, inside government before those workers go back to the private sector. And by the way, shameless plug, you can find all of our past shows over at civicmedia.us if you want to catch that. At the time,
very nice.
Thank you. At the time, you and I were discussing the concern of what kind of information would those employees have access to and what would actually happen to that information if they left their government service job with that knowledge.
Well, they would, because it's only 2 years. These are, again, you mentioned it, two-year temporary programs. These are not permanent employees.
No.
These are, hey, and what's in 2 years? Let's remind you again, the midterms.
And now, as we talk about this morning, we have a prime example of what that actually looks like. And this honestly, this should be frightening to everybody. The agency's inspector general is investigating the disclosure and has alerted members of Congress of its existence, according to a letter by the acting inspector general to top members of four congressional committees reviewed by the Washington Post, who did a whole lot of digging on this. And two people familiar with this process. Now, the inspector general's office has also shared the disclosure with the Government Accountability Office, which has been conducting its own audit of Doge's access to data. So you can see that there's maybe a bit of a pattern that was happening and emerging within mm-hmm. Doge. And again, I know everybody likes to say that we're taking it too seriously, or we're, you know, Trump derangement syndrome is what gets always thrown at people who talk about these things. Turns out we're not actually crazy, Brian.
No, we're not. And it's, I don't have, you know, the inspectors general are usually impartial. They're outside. So I'm glad they're investigating.
Yes.
I don't have confidence that the reports that they turn over to Congress are going to go anywhere. This is where you rub off on me a little bit, and that's not a euphemism, that I tend to, I was just about to say, I hope some members of Congress would do the right thing and look at this and go, oh my God, we have to act. We have to act on this because they all pay taxes too.
Right.
See, this is one thing that will affect all of us.
Yes.
Whether you're elected, whether you don't have a job, it doesn't matter. It affects everybody.
Here's my question, though, and these are just things that pop into my own brain when I start reading about this these types of things. And yes, I ask the same questions. Will Congress care? With as entrenched as this Congress is in this administration, is this something that some members, I'm not going to lay it all on all of them, is this right. something that some members would also feel that benefits them, though, with this type of information in their hands? There are also members of this Congress who believe the same way that the administration does, that people of a certain skin color should not be allowed to vote, that we have to dig deeper into the immigration issues of this country, women should not be allowed to vote or have too many rights, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Et cetera, all the things that if you've been with us this morning, we've talked about. So at the same time, to me, this is where my mind goes. Are there members of Congress who also feel that they would benefit from this thumb drive that this DOGE employee has tucked in a pocket?
It's a good question. Lynn from Golden Valley texts in, maybe Social Security could sue Elon. I don't know. We'll see if that comes out. So here's the complaint. According to this complaint, this engineer at Social Security allegedly told the whistleblower that he needed help transferring data from a thumb drive to, quote, his personal computer so that he could sanitize the data before using it at, they redacted the name of the company he works at now, his private company. The engineer told colleagues that once he had removed personal details from the data, he wanted to upload it into the company's system. Now, the whistleblower filed a complaint with the inspector general in January. The Post, Washington Post, who, again, you can read the whole thing there, but they contacted the agency and the company in January both said they had not heard of the complaint. The complaint also alleges that after leaving the government employment, the DOGE member said that he still had his computer and his credentials. Social Security officials say no, he had lost his data credential privileges and turned in his laptop when he departed the agency. So a little back
Did
and
he?
Forth, but it is still worth an investigation. It still is alarming. It still confirms all the suspicions that we had. So, and that's not the only, there was another complaint, Jamie. There was a separate complaint.
Yes, and this was made in August by the agency's former chief data officer. His name is Charles Borges, and he alleges that members of DOGE improperly uploaded copies of American Social Security data to a digital cloud, putting individuals' private information at risk. Now, in January, the Trump administration actually acknowledged that DOGE staffers were responsible for separate data breaches at the agency. And Borges's attorneys say that in the complaint that DOGE members received uninhibited access to sensitive data and potentially violated internal security protocols and federal private laws. I mean, if that doesn't...
You're all overreacting.
If that You're doesn't make your skin crawl just a little bit this morning, you're missing the point, I think, because the fact that they have this much data at their fingertips into every single one of us is crazy. And the databases that we're talking about here, Brian, one is called the Master Death File. It actually
named that Pete Hegseth.
Yes, probably. It actually includes records for more than 500 million living and dead Americans, including their social security numbers, places and dates of birth, citizenship, race and ethnicity, and their parents' names.
Wow, nothing bad can happen with that information being out there.
I mean, I'm going to go back to it, and I'll say it again. Where do we draw the line? If you're a congressional member and you have this information at your fingertips that somebody took all 500 million people's records on a thumb drive with them out of their office and took it to their private sector job, are you just going to sit there and be like, it's fine? No big deal. Or do you continue to placate the president because we wouldn't want to upset him in the middle of a filibuster argument over the SAVE Act?
Why? We know the answer. and I know we have to keep asking the question despite the fact that we know the answer. It should be alarming. All of this should be alarming. But I am always amazed that there are people who don't care about the privacy issue, not only this right. particular issue, but privacy in general. And the lazy default defense of, if you don't have anything to hide, what are you worried about? I don't know, because I don't want everything I do to be public knowledge. I don't want every thought I have, everything I say right. in my house, every transaction I make at the bank. I don't want everybody to know about this. I don't want the government surveilling me, which is what part of this whole Anthropic case that mm-hmm. we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks is about, mass surveillance. I don't want to walk down the street thinking I'm being watched all the time. I know some of us believe that more cameras make things safer. They might, but more cameras also mean less privacy. And right. we are becoming lab rats. As we walk down the street, we are constantly being observed. Every action we take, every stroke of the keypad, everything is being supervised. And I don't know why people don't have a problem with that.
I often wonder that as well, because we live in a day and age where technology is moving so quickly. And I mean, you even look at your basic things like your phone, right? You talk about something in the privacy of a conversation, yes. and all of a sudden you go to social media and you have all of the ads for it right there, because somebody is always listening. Somebody is always watching.
And we joke about that, but that's the tip of the iceberg.
It is. That was just the start of it, I think.
Yes, that's minimal.
It was. But I think, too, in a case like this, and you and I have talked about this, it raises bigger questions of what happens when we're starting to fill these civil service jobs with people whose primary loyalty is specifically to a political agenda instead of career public service agents or mm-hmm. employees. And government agencies rely on these career professionals, and they also rely on the strict oversight by people who have been trained and have done their job for many, many years, because the data that they handle belongs to us. It doesn't belong to them. It all belongs to us. It just happens to get stored in their databases. And when you start weakening those guardrails and you start firing experienced workers, you bring in these temporary political hires, and then you send them back into the private sector, like the administration is now proposing to do with federal jobs, you're creating this environment where security lapses become much more likely. And we are all then in a much more precarious situation, not only with our data, but with like what we're talking about as well, with our privacy. And that should be a red flag for all of us.
Scott chimes in on the text line. You can too, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. He says, he's texting in from Madison. So the government has my files, the files of my name and my place of birth, but I need to prove who I am and where I was born?
Well, yeah, they aren't going to actually go through them.
Yeah, we're not using it for voting, Scott. We're going to use it. We got to use it for everything else. It is,
Essentially, it's to still take...
You're right.
You're not wrong. Essentially, if they have this information, they're looking for one thing. They are still looking for... to me, this still goes back to everything that this immigration fight has been centered on, everything that these voting rights have been centered on, is that we are trying to make a right population and maybe not a white population. Maybe.
Oh, they're synonymous for some.
They are.
It's not far off. Anyway, when we come back, let's take a deep breath and have a little swipe or stay, and then we'll get back to the heavy stuff. We'll do it all here on Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Let's break out of the bubble and see what's happening out there in pop culture. It's Swipe or Stay on Daybreak.
7:22 right now. Thank God for Swiper Stay.
Take a little break. We get to breathe. You get to breathe. Don't worry. The serious stuff is coming back. But we need a little pop culture. That's why Frank is here, our senior producer. Frank, we are looking forward to some exciting choices on Swiper Stay this morning.
Well, good. I think we've got a couple of good things.
Set the bar low, Frank. That's all. That's the best way.
That's what I do.
I may have written low, one.
I underpromise.
Okay.
I overdeliver, Brian.
I love that.
Well, we'll judge that at the end.
That's my MO. But yeah, Swiper Stay. I'm going to read some pop culture headlines. Brian and Jamie will have to decide whether they're going to stay on it and hear more or swipe on to the next story. In the event of a tie, producer Parker will be the tiebreaker. All right, story number one, a Hollywood action star finally gets a long-awaited sequel.
I think I know this. I'm going to stay because it seems ridiculous.
Yeah, stay. We'll stay on this one.
Arnold Schwarzenegger
What?
Has announced that he is returning.
Conan and the colonoscopy.
Barbarian. He made the announcement at the Arnold. Here, I'll hold for laughter.
Let me put down my walker and get my sword.
All right, we're ready. We can do this.
He made the announcement at the Arnold Sports Festival in Columbus this past weekend, saying it's a great story where Conan was 40 years king and he gets complacent and now he gets forced out of the kingdom slowly.
Of course, he can't go fast. He's 106.
This is my favorite synopsis of an upcoming movie. Then there's conflict, of course, and then he somehow comes back, and then there's all kinds of madness and violence and magic and creatures. Now, of course, you have all the special effects, and the studio system has plenty of money to make those movies really big. So I'm looking forward to all those projects. That was a direct quote from Mr. Schwarzenegger. Sorry, I wasn't going to do the accent. I should have left.
Can we please change the description of the show to all kinds of violence and magic and creatures?
I think that would be so good.
Our special effects budget.
The show is very good.
If there's a unicorn involved, I'm in. Okay.
My God. Ryan, did you watch the Conan movies?
I did. That's the one Schwarzenegger movie I never watched. I watched every other Schwarzenegger movie, but I never saw Conan because he still wasn't really speaking in Conan. I don't think he had many lines in there.
It's grunting.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was when he was young and had just come to the United States from Austria, so the accent was still very, very dominant. You got to watch Conan.
As opposed to now, where it sounds like he's been here for his entire life.
Hey, he was a governor.
You need to.
I know he was governor.
You need to watch Conan. You should watch Conan. It's good. Right. It's fun.
I haven't yet. Maybe.
The Barbarian.
All right. We have a Rihanna update.
Okay.
Are we interested?
Swipe.
Okay. Theme park deals with health scare.
Ooh, stay.
Stay. I hope there was poop in Small World.
Do we have a guess which theme park?
Dollywood.
Six Flags.
It's actually Disneyland.
Oh.
The gold standard.
That was number two. Okay.
I might have been right then. Did somebody poop in Small World?
Nobody pooped in Small World. Well, they probably did. We just don't know about it.
All right.
But Disneyland dealt with an alarming situation yesterday. Disney reps said this afternoon, building materials being used by a contractor produced a reaction backstage at Disneyland Park, and the area was examined by appropriate response teams. Several cast members were treated on site by paramedics and released.
Oh,
and
my.
At this time, 8 cast members experiencing dizziness and shortness of breath were transported to local hospitals.
Did
they huff too much sealer or something back there when they were doing so? What happened?
They were doing some kind of project. Some odor got out. They're being tight-lipped about this, as the mouse usually does. Disney reps added, out of an abundance of caution, adjacent onstage areas were cleared of guests and are expected to reopen soon.
Well, I hope everybody's okay.
How did they even know? Because those characters are not allowed to speak.
Right? Well, when they start tipping over and passing out,
Pluto?
I will say Disney does refer to every employee as a cast member.
They do.
You are all part of creating the magic, Brian.
Wow. I know that, Frank. I just, if Minnie's having the vapors because of something that's going on backstage, I need to find out what it was.
I mean, I guess if the mouse is passed out on a sidewalk, I think we
I feel like garbage. I think I'm going to puke. Somebody help me.
We'll see if anything develops here and we finally get an explanation from the mouse, but don't count on it.
You won't.
For those of you just joining us, we are doing Swipe or Stay. I'm reading pop culture headlines. Brian and Jamie have to decide whether we're going to swipe on to the next one or stay as we move on to story number four. A big NFL deal is off.
Ooh, I know this story. We'll stay.
Well, Jamie will stay. I'll stay too, I guess. We all get to vote.
You got
Jamie.
To vote. My vote. You guys could have done whatever you wanted. Anyway.
All right.
The Las Vegas Raiders announced Tuesday that the Ravens have backed out of a trade agreement that would have sent all-pro defensive end Max Crosby to Baltimore in exchange for two first-round picks.
Wow. What happened?
There were no official details given by either team, but league sources are pointing to the fact that Max Crosby failed his physical.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which is a big no-no for anybody making trades. However, there is rumors that there are multiple teams reaching out to see if they can still get Max Crosby. Let's hope the Chicago Bears are one of them, because I would love him in Chicago. Everybody listening to the show hates me for saying that, but it's true.
You know what really sucks for Max Crosby is he spent like 3 days out in Baltimore getting ready to join the team, sign the deal. And then at the last minute, they were like, nope, sorry, not happening.
John K says Crosby to the Packers and is booing me. So with that, Mark has given me the countdown. I'm getting booed off stage.
It's like the official hook. You're off.
Yeah.
It's 7:29 right now. Thank you so much, Frank. Another great edition of Swipe or Stay. You are listening to Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And we'll talk about a little unionization after this.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. If you are listening in La Crosse on LCX, over in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, or in Hayward on WBZH, we are glad that you are here. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Recently, a few cafes in Milwaukee have become unionized. Now, that usually comes after bitter talks between ownership and labor. But late last month, employees at Discourse Coffee, which is a 3-store chain in Milwaukee, formed a union, and the process was quite different. Joining us to explain that process and tell us what happened is Peter Rickman. He's president of Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Workers Union. Peter, thanks for being here. This is good news if you are a Discourse Coffee employee, and probably good news if you work in other places and you've been contemplating this. What makes the Discourse story different from other efforts that you've been a part of lately?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the time to be here with you this morning. It shouldn't be a newsworthy story when a company does the right thing and recognizes the choice that workers have made to form a union and recognizes their union and says, all right, well, if a clear, strong majority of you have signed union cards saying you want to join, let's sit down at the table and start bargaining a contract. That's what the Discourse Coffee owners have done. And our hats are off to them. We raise our coffee mugs to them. unfortunately, what's far too common is the example of other coffee companies. Many people know Starbucks nationally has been bitterly fighting their baristas and other coffee workers seeking to form a union and secure a contract. Here locally in Milwaukee, Anodyne coffee workers, I think, deserve a ton of credit for leading the way, voting literally 100% union yes to join the union, and have dealt with obstacles and obstruction from the private equity firm that owns them called Fairwave, based out of Kansas City, every step of the way. And I think the Discourse Coffee leadership looked at what happened with Anodyne, looked at what's happened with Starbucks, and said, look, that's not who we are. We don't want to fight baristas. We're a team together here, building the premier craft coffee operation in Milwaukee and said, well, we respect these folks. We respect the choice that they've made. And let's sit down and bargain a contract like grownups and get on with the business of brewing great coffee.
Peter, let's talk about that just for just a moment, because for workers to have management recognize the union just that quickly and not really put up a fight and didn't really drag out the process, what does that mean for those workers who are involved in this unionization?
It means they can get back to the business of making, you know, the best craft coffee in Milwaukee sooner rather than later, instead of worrying about fighting the boss or marching on a picket line, agitating around with customers to support them in their battle. I think it's worth stepping back here and noting that American labor law, just for everyone who's listening here to understand this, was written closer to the Civil War than it was to today. It really doesn't reflect the realities that working people confront day to day in our workplaces here. And that process has been broken over the years. It's been broken by bad court decisions with judges far too friendly to the boss class. It's been broken by agency decisions at the National Labor Relations Board by people who are, you know, essentially right-wing politicians, you know, doing the business of the people at one of our independent federal agencies. And so it's made it very difficult for your average ordinary working person to form a union in their workplace. The vast majority of Americans support unions, want unions to have more power, but our laws don't reflect that. Whether it's coffee workers or factory workers, warehouse workers, anybody, it's become very difficult for workers to form a union. They have to jump through hoops and hurdles of a very Byzantine process that takes months, years even, just to get to the point where Discourse Coffee workers got very quickly with their company recognizing the union. And so where most workers have to go through an adversarial process involving litigation and getting to a vote only after months of delays, these workers at Discourse Coffee were able to get there very quickly because their company said, look, we want to deal with workers as equals at the bargaining table, not as adversaries that were fighting on the picket line. And so I think this is providing an example to not just other coffee workers and not just other coffee employers, but employers more broadly. This is what you can do. You can sit down and negotiate a contract when a majority of workers have signed a card. This is America, for God's sake. Majority should rule. You can sit down and bargain a contract to deal with the issues that matter to your employees.
Peter Rickman's our guest. He's the president of Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Workers Union. What is it now? We're talking about Discourse Coffee. You mentioned Starbucks. There's other. What is it about the coffee industry that we're hearing more and more of those shops being the ones that are unionizing or fighting to unionize, as opposed to, I don't know, other sorts of things? What is it about the coffee industry?
Well, let me ask you all something. Did you have coffee this morning before you started the show?
I'm having coffee right now.
That's a great answer. Thank you. We appreciate your support for the coffee industry. There's probably not a single listener out there today who hasn't had a cup of coffee or won't have a cup of coffee this morning. Coffee workers are essential. Hospitality workers, like those in the coffee industry, make our world go round. And for far too long, coffee workers have been left behind with less than living wages and basically being treated without dignity and respect. They have no rights on the job. And so it shouldn't surprise anyone that coffee workers have said, you know, for us, we need a voice and a seat at the table for us to shape the decisions of the companies that we build with our labor, whether it's roasters or baristas, anywhere else in the coffee industry enterprise. They know that they need to form a union. And I think the Starbucks workers have really blazed a trail and shown people in the coffee industry, yes, you can do this. And so it's led to folks from local operations like Anodyne or Fairgrounds, Colectivo, Discourse Coffee, Ruby Coffee Roasters in Stevens Point to say, look, we got to do this too. If the only way we're ever going to get living wages is with a union contract. The only way we're ever going to have a voice and a seat at the table on the decisions that matter to us about our jobs and our work that we love. Remember, you quit the jobs you hate. You stay and work to change the jobs you love. The only way we're going to have a voice and a seat at the table is with a union and a contract. And so many coffee workers here locally and around the country have started to take those initial steps And as they find that more and more of their coworkers are looking at one another saying, we are essential workers. The world turns around us and the coffee that we brew and serve. They've said, yeah, we can take a chance. We can take the risk to make this happen, because the truth is the bosses and the customers that we serve can't go about their day without us. So I think what we've seen here is a broad move across the service sector and the hospitality industry, but of course, in particular here, we're talking about the coffee industry, of workers saying, we are going to stand up, we're going to unite and earn our voice and seat at the table, earn our living wages through a union contract. It's an incredibly inspiring movement to be a part of here. And I don't think this is the last one that we'll see here in Milwaukee or across Wisconsin.
Let's start there. I mean, what other industries, Peter, are you thinking that this could affect? What other parts of the state are you also thinking that unionization among our service workers could affect? How does that look on your end?
Yeah, I'll point out an example to you all. A couple of years ago, folks who serve the beverages, the beer at Lambeau Field, got in touch with us and said, you know, we make the company here, we make the packers, we make the food and beverage vendor here a lot of money, but we're not bringing home our fair share. And there's decisions that are made about how our placements are being done. And we love what we get to do. We serve beer at Lambeau Field for Green Bay Packer games, for God's sake. It's got to be one of the coolest jobs around. And they said, look, we need a voice and a seat at the table, too. And our union started working with those Lambeau vendors, and we were able to secure union recognition there. 87% of workers there voted union yes when they had the opportunity. And now we have one of the strongest contracts in the industry for these workers. And there hasn't been a single complaint, as far as I know of, about any changes to how the beer is served at Lambeau Field. The company keeps on making decent money. And the folks at the game have familiar faces that they can count on there, because these are decent jobs. Folks want to keep on working. So it's beer vendors at Lambeau Field. It's coffee workers in downtown Milwaukee. And I think that there's this growing sense that in this rigged system economy, where the share of national income going to labor, to worker wages, has literally never been lower, while the share of national income going to corporate profits has literally never been higher, and those two are related, the only way that working people are going to get our fair share, the only way we're going to rebuild a middle-class economy here in the United States, is with unions and with union contracts that address the issues that matter to workers, from wages to benefits to dignity, rights, and respect on the job. 70% of Americans support unions, want unions to have more power, and more power, especially when compared to the big business, big banks and Wall Street and the monopolies that control our lives. I think people see unions not only as a way to get their fair shake in their workplace, but to balance the power in our economy more broadly. There's no single force other than unions that fights for working class people in the economy and in our political landscape. And so there's naturally going to be more and more people saying, hey, I want to build that in my workplace. I want to be part of this broad labor movement. And so whether it's beer vendors or baristas, we are seeing a move towards more workers building this labor movement for the 21st century that embraces and builds the unity and strength of service sector workers, hospitality workers.
Peter, you mentioned the 70% of Americans are for unions. What are the criticisms from that other 30%? What is it? Is it that costs will be passed down to consumers? What are they arguing about when they are saying they're not for unionization?
Well, Brian, you might have invited the wrong person on the show to articulate the critiques of unions, but I'll do my best. I'll be a good sport about the whole thing.
Well, no, I'm playing devil's advocate for a moment, because as a union member, I...
Bosses don't want workers to have unions by and large,
right?
Because bosses want to hold on to power. Let me ask you guys this. In every non-union job you've ever had, who decided how much you got paid?
The boss.
Who decided what the policies were?
The boss.
What about the staffing levels, the scheduling?
Big employer has kept his boot on my neck,
right,
Peter. I'm not going to lie to you.
The bosses. But why did they get to decide? What did they have that individual workers don't?
They had the power. They had the job.
The money.
Exactly right. Without a union, bosses have all the power. A union is just a group of workers coming together to balance that power out. And with the power balanced, we sit down at the table as equals to negotiate a legally binding contract. Bosses don't want workers to have unions because workers can have power to address pay and policy, staffing, scheduling, all the issues that matter. Bosses don't want to give up the power. And so I think the critiques of unions are really rooted in a bad faith view of what that entails. Look, there once was a time when labor market bargaining power was really balanced across the economy. By the way, that's when we built the world's first mass middle class. And I think most of us would like to go back to those shared prosperity economy days of yore, where there was a model of labor market bargaining power that says, well, look, if we see dramatic pay increases in auto plants and steel mills and paper plants, you know, yeah, we might see cost inflation across the economy. Well, we've long since moved past that sort of thing, but that critique still persists. Oh, if we see pay increases for working class people, whether it's in coffee shops or hotels or in warehouses, well, you know, that's going to increase prices for the rest of us. I got news for y'all. We've just lived through the worst inflation of my lifetime, and working people didn't see a dime in real income. In fact, we've fallen further behind. So there are bad faith critiques that exist out there. Oh, unions protect lazy workers. Baloney. There's not a single union contract in America that will protect a bad worker from being terminated here. So we've got bad faith critiques of unions out there. But the truth is, working people across the country, 70%, the working class supermajority is for unions. And we need politicians to have our backs.
Peter, congrats on the Discourse Coffee case. And we will talk to you again. Peter Rickman is president of Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Workers Union. More to come on the Civic Media Network.
Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
From Lake Superior to Lake Michigan, this is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We've got a text that we should probably get to based off of our conversation with Peter, Peter Rickman from the Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Workers Union. Thanking him again for coming on. But this was a great one. I'll let you go to the text line, Brian.
Oh, well, we were talking about Discourse Coffee becoming unionized, and Lynn says, from my experience, some of the most rabid anti-union people I've met are older and own a home, but they grew up in a machinist union, which is why they can own a home. But they remember a few screwballs who didn't do their job and hid behind the union. I actually quit one job because the business development VP was one such hypocrite who insisted only Fox Cable News was allowed in the break room.
Wow.
The union would probably cover that.
Yeah, probably.
I remember the teachers union in Chicago was very strong. And my dad had been a teacher, but then moved into administration, became a suit, literally. And he was trying to get a teacher fired who had done everything that should get you fired.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the union, it was very, very difficult. And those are the kind of things that Peter was mentioning.
Right.
That, you know, people hear that, and Lynn's text from Golden Valley, that refers to that. The one or two examples of somebody who games the system,
right,
basically. But, you know.
Yeah.
I got no beef with unions. Unions built this whole country.
Oh, yes, and especially here in Wisconsin. I mean, our roots go back to the populist labor union days, all basically stemming way before 2010, and then we all know what happened there, and we won't get into the history because we've got some other good things to talk about this morning. But
you don't want to do a deep dive in Wisconsin labor union connections and history?
No, because...
Bring it from the 1800s to today?
I probably could, but...
I know you could.
We don't have enough time, and I want to talk about the outdoors, Brian, because...
Well, okay, because we could clear the rest of the show, and I could, you know...
I'm good.
I'll just sit here and nod.
Give me a little prep time, and that's something we could talk about down the road. I gotta have my notes in line. I don't want to get my timeline out of order.
A very special Daybreak. That'll be your... You could do an entire week of secret show on just the ties to labor. But for the third year in a row... Speaking of outdoor recreation, man, is it important in Wisconsin. 3 years in a row, it has boosted Wisconsin's economy. $12 billion last year. $12
billion. That's insane.
That is, it's great. Well, you look around. everywhere you go in Wisconsin, no matter what part of the state, there is room and beautiful outdoor space. A lot of areas for outdoor recreation, no matter what you want to do. You want to go up to the North Woods and in the winter and snowmobile and do all that stuff and be cold. That's not for me, but I'll go to Door County in the summer when it's nice and warm, and I'll sit by the water and I'll eat some pie and not a euphemism and enjoy and just enjoy the scenery. So $12 billion, but that doesn't put us at the top. You would think that would put us toward the top of the heap, Jamie, and we're
third.
We're in the middle.
We're third. So that tells us that there are other places that have equally great outdoor space. But after this news was announced, Governor Evers said in a statement that outdoor, quote, this is a quote, by the way, outdoor recreation draws visitors from near and far in all four seasons, supporting local businesses, creating local jobs, and showcasing everything that makes Wisconsin the special place it is. While unnecessary delays slowed the release of this data down, this record-breaking growth highlights the strength and momentum of outdoor recreation in Wisconsin. And by the way, it was Governor Evers who created the Office of Outdoor Recreation back in 2019, and it finally received permanent funding and staffing under the current two-year $111 billion state budget that the governor signed in July. So, you know, not bad work for Governor Evers as far like it was like he recognized the things that make Wisconsin really awesome. And, you know, just kind of dove in to make them permanent placements in this state.
Yes, because as important as elections are in this state, nobody's coming here for elections. They're coming here for the outdoors. No. The tourism numbers were also huge last year. According to the Wisconsin Tourism Secretary, state tourism industry drew 114.5 million visits and generated a record-breaking $25.8 billion in 2024. So that's amazing.
Here's my question, though. This news is awesome, and I love to be in the outdoors as much as possible. I've been to several of the areas, like the Driftless area, the North Woods, Lake Michigan, Lake Superior. I love to do hiking, love to go to the state parks. Here's my question, though, and this is where it makes me a little sad, because hearing numbers like this also makes me resent the political fights that are happening around land right now in this state, right? Because there's a big push from some large companies and Republican lawmakers to scale back or weaken the programs that are essentially protecting Wisconsin land and giving us all of this outdoor space, including that Knowles Nelson stewardship program. And so when you hear that the outdoor recreation is generating billions of dollars and supporting hundreds of thousands of jobs, it kind of seems like a no-brainer to protect the land and the access to it, doesn't it?
Again, logic, no place in government. Let's just put that out there. But yes, it does. And listen, when you're not from Wisconsin, people hear Wisconsin, they think dairy. That's the thing. Dairy, you need farmland. But then you come to Wisconsin and you go, if you leave Madison, if you leave Milwaukee, and you go anywhere within 15 minutes of any of those big cities, you're like, oh, wow, we're right here.
Gorgeous.
And if you're in Milwaukee, you go to the lakefront. And if you're in Madison, you wander down the isthmus and then have to learn what an isthmus is. It's just a beautiful state.
Yes.
And thankfully, the governor has put protections in place.
Yes.
And we, as people who work here, live here, are reaping the benefits.
Absolutely. And we should appreciate it. And I mean, you just look at the amount of jobs, tourism, local businesses staying open simply because of our outdoor space. I mean, it feels like a natural progression to want to be focused on fiscal responsibility and grow the economy all at the same time while conserving the land and making sure that it sticks around. I don't know.
Sounds too good to be true.
Crazy thoughts this morning. 7:59 right now. This is Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. There was a protest last night in Madison. What was it about? We'll find out after this on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.